It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss. My lip gloss, I only rock clear. On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson. I got that.
Welcome back, and we're going to go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line because drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $750 on average. Go to progressive.com to learn more. All right, joining us on the Progressive Insurance guest line is one of our favorites here on the show. Ryan Leaf is here, a former Heisman finalist and the second overall pick in the 1998 draft. Ryan, thanks for coming on and being here with David and Carla.
David, Carla, how are you guys?
Well, we're great. We missed you in Vegas.
We really did.
Andrewly, you know, for those who don't know, Andrewly, we have a team dinner before the big game, and usually it's an all-you-can-eat buffet, and Ryan Leaf puts away a little more food than Carla Dawson.
But he's a girl dad now. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, first one I've missed in quite a while, but you know, definitely worth it. We got a little 11-week-old baby girl who's just growing and, you know, kind of the light of my life now. So we're having a lot of fun. She watched the whole Super Bowl with me. It's a lot different, aww, you know, with the little girl in your arms, feeding her and letting her sleep. And so it was nice last night.
Well, I have to admit, Ryan, I had to fangirl, and your daughter is beautiful. Oh, well, my gosh.
She looks like her mom. That's the benefit of all this.
Hey, thank can't go goodness wrong with either of you. And you've been busy because I watched your whole segment on Good Morning Football this morning on breaking down how Kansas City won. So we're bookending it for you today. You're going to end it with us too, but you were fantastic this morning. Loved hearing all your takes.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I think it was pretty inevitable.
Yeah.
Just, you know, with what Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have been able to do this postseason. I mean, it's been murderer's row that they've run through to get to this championship. And so, you got to give them a ton of credit. But, I mean, if you really want to dissect the game and really deconstruct it, it was the mistakes simply by San Francisco and the special teams.
Special teams, that's it. Yeah.
The extra point was a little low. It got blocked by Leo Chanel. And then, of course, the muff punt. That let them have an easy touchdown. Other than that, they had one really good drive, and that was to finish the game. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the way you break it down, the kickers were spectacular. Yeah. Thought Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan called a good game. And, you know, just little things in a game of inches like that game last night, there were the mistakes that were magnified. And I do think that if, you know, Kyle Shanahan had a chance to do it over again, I think there'd be a bigger discussion around what the new overtime rules are like and why you want to be on defense to start the overtime period. It's a college football rule, really, which has been instituted. You want to know what's ahead of you. You want to know what you have to accomplish to try to win the football game. Fell right into the hands of the Chiefs. And after San Francisco kicked that field goal in overtime, I just simply said, this game's over.
I mean, I did too.
Mahomes is not going to give them the ball back. It's done. And that's exactly what happened.
We're talking to Ryan Leaf, and yes, that sense of inevitability was in the air when the Chiefs got that ball on the final drive of overtime. It was just, I just felt like, oh my goodness, they can't give him that shot. But he was just outstanding down the stretch. And, you know, it's interesting. Craig wanted us to ask you this question, and I think it's sort of fun to think about. If you needed a game-winning drive, would you take Brady or Mahomes or even somebody else? But, I mean, that sense of...
I'd take Ryan Leaf. I don't know about you. What's wrong with you, David?
Ryan's on the short list here. But it is interesting because we were talking about that sense of inevitability with Brady. You always had it, and now we have it with Mahomes. And they're both guys you just believe are going to win the game if they have the ball in their hands toward the end of the game. Who do you got,
you
Ryan?
You do. I don't think there's been a close for Patrick Mahomes. You know, there hasn't been that in a Super Bowl. He's been really good at it, but there's never been really one in the Super Bowl for him to win it. And to do it in that fashion, I thought it was spectacular. Last year, kind of anticlimactic with the holding penalty on the defense for the easy field goal. This was an exclamation point, you know, the way he drove down the field, the fourth down call, putting in his hands, his carries. He was completely the offense on that final drive, and there was just nothing on the defensive side of the football that they could do to stop him. And I think that's what made it so special. And so Right now, I'm going to go with the greatest of all time and Tom Brady. If you had to, gun to my head type of mentality, like, who are you going to go on the last final drive? I'm going to go with Tom Brady right now. But I mean, this is 6 years in.
Right.
6 years from now, you know, we could be in a situation where, you know, Patrick Mahomes is looking to notch that seventh championship somewhere, and this would be a different discussion. He's been really good, and I think he's a great example for the NFL. I think he's a perfect, you know, I don't like to use the word perfect, but I think
he's a great ambassador for the game.
Great ambassador for the game, family, community, all of that, and it's been special to watch, especially, you know, having played the position and knowing how difficult it is to see him do it and do it with such ease and understanding. Speaks volumes to the man's preparation, character, and everything.
Ryan, you bring up a great point in ambassador for the game. I want to ask you this. I'd love your thoughts on Travis Kelce's first half line last night. One reception for 1 yard and one tantrum with laying of hands. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, you don't. It's not a good look. I mean, these guys are, I tell you what, I know that Travis felt comfortable enough to do that because of the relationship, the relationship that they have, clearly, you know, and the way they spoke about it afterwards. Now, we all can say that now after having witnessed a victory, right?
Exactly.
I mean, if this was a loss, it would be magnifying, would have been magnifying so much more. And there was an intensity to him. Last night, you saw him during the national anthem pregame. He looked very locked in, and there was a lot of disappointment. I mean, and frustration early in that game. San Francisco had their number, and Steve Wilks was doing a great job keeping Patrick Mahomes contained, Travis Kelce without the football, and then things starting to kind of loosen up. And I don't know if there's a better coaching staff in the NFL that makes halftime adjustments like the Kansas City Chiefs do. And it just continues to impress greatly with their ability to do so. And it was, you know, first rate once again. Every Super Bowl victory for this team has been one that they've had to come back from. And there's just never a doubt. There's a complete array of trust in that locker room. And because of that, something that looked so bad on TV, and it would, you know, Andy's a big guy, he's older. It kind of looked sad, you know. You didn't want him to fall down, and I'm glad he didn't. You know, they got to celebrate and stuff like that. But it wasn't a good look for Travis, and I think he would probably be, you know, after a couple of days removed from it, I think he would probably speak to that too and say, hey, you know, that was out of character of me. And I don't think he'll make an excuse for like it. It was, you know, we were in the heat of the moment in competition. I think he'll take some accountability for it. I really do.
Well, and especially with his saturation in the media on commercials. I mean, he's a very visible. And to have that, you know, for little kids and things like that are looking up to him, I hope you're right. I hope he regrets the way he handled it. And you're right. It came out great in the end. So no one's going to talk, you know, make a big deal out of it. But it could have been a different story had they been on the losing end.
We're talking to Ryan Leaf. Ryan, one thing I think there's going to become, remember we had that Patriots fatigue, and now we may have Chiefs fatigue if they just keep winning and they keep finishing in the Super Bowl every year. Now, the 49ers have been good and contending for some time here, but Carl and I were talking offline about there were some teams that emerged this year that could threaten the dominance of the Chiefs and or the 49ers in those two conferences. I mean, the Texans emerged. The Lions were pretty strong. The Packers under Jordan Love did quite well and exceeded expectations. When you look ahead next year, is there a team or two that you say, hey, we got to keep an eye on them because they could be the one to break through in their given conference?
Well, you know, I'm with you when it comes to the Green Bay Packers. They easily could have been in the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, they had that game in hand in San Francisco, and I just feel the youth of Jordan Love in his first playoffs. And then Detroit absolutely blew it. You know, they attempt the field goal in the third quarter and take it to a 3-score game. I don't know if if the San Francisco 49ers have enough time with the possessions that they'll have to actually win that football game. So, you know, there's some really good teams in the NFC. How are the Philadelphia Eagles going to respond? You know, can the Dallas Cowboys finally get over the top in the playoffs? You know, they bring in Mike Zimmer as a defensive coordinator after Dan Quinn left. That's a conversation to be had in the NFC. And then there's always a surprise team, right? There's always a team that steps forward. I think Green Bay was that team this year. Which team in the NFC is going to be, you know, a team that steps into the fold that no one expected? I think the Saints probably have a pretty good chance. Tampa was a team as well out of the South. So, you know, we'll see. Free agency is a big part of this. You know, where guys end up, how you bolster your roster. San Francisco, fortunately, you know, outside of Chase Young, no one really is, all their big guys are under contract, and Brock Purdy is on a rookie deal, a very low rookie deal, under $1 million a year for one more year before he can even contemplate looking to an extension. So they have another full year with a very good quarterback to try to make a difference in the NFC. The AFC is just loaded, but it's clearly shown, as loaded as it was this year, in a down year for the Chiefs offensively, they still win the Super Bowl. So I don't know if there's a team in the AFC that you could argue is going to knock off. They dealt with everybody, the most difficult imaginable teams in the AFC on the road, and won a championship.
Yeah, we may be seeing the Chiefs again, to your point. Ryan Leaf, really appreciate you joining us. And again, sorry to miss you last week, but I'm so glad that you are enjoying fatherhood.
You bet. Thank you, David. Appreciate it, everybody.
Great to talk to you.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it was a great chance to visit with Ryan Leaf last segment. One thing he raised was the new overtime rules in the NFL, and there are several components to yesterday's game and the new overtime rules, but let's start with Kyle Shanahan's decision to take the ball in overtime, to start with the ball. To me, that was just a mistake. I mean, you should defer. This is, we've seen this in college football forever. It's basically the same lineup. Obviously, in college ball, the rules are different. You start at a different place. But the same logic holds.
Yes.
And the answer is you defer so you know what you've got to do when you get your turn.
And then you can put your scheme in place, because you know what you need to do.
You know what you need to do. Or you know whether you need to be going for it on fourth downs or not. And in the case of Patrick Mahomes, he knew he needed to go for it on fourth down and took full advantage of that. In the case of the 49ers, because they started with the ball, when they got to fourth down, well, they would kick the field goal because, well, they didn't know what was going to come. It really changes the dynamic. And I just think that was the mistake of the game. Look, the 49ers went head-to-head with the vaunted Chiefs. In fact, if they hadn't been for a few special teams miscues, they probably would have had the lead, and maybe it wouldn't have even gone to overtime. But there they sat. They had matched them stride for stride. And that decision, to me, was the one that lost the game, because it allowed Mahomes four-down territory on that final drive. And you can't give Mahomes four-down territory to go get 7 points.
No, and you know, I love, you brought up a great point, because honestly, I think it should be noted, and it's not being said enough because the 49ers are on the losing end of it. Purdy did enough. His defense did enough. His O-line did enough, even with Chris Jones permeating it at a regular clip. Kyle Shanahan did enough. This is all in pretty much the regular game. Special teams did not do enough. Special teams is who lost it. Until we got to the overtime. And you're right. That was Shanahan's mistake. And so, okay, you've got it. You've chosen to do this. Oops, here you go. Do you really think, I don't need to look at any analytics. I've seen enough of Mahomes that I know a field goal is not going to beat him. No way in hell. So if I've got it first and I see what I'm up against, I'm going for it on fourth down, because there is no way. This is the Super Bowl. there is no way a field goal is going to beat Mahomes. Not happening. I was so confused by that whole thing.
Well, so that does show, look, based on what you just said and Mahomes' ability to come back, that would say, okay, the 49ers need to go for it on fourth down. They need to go for the touchdown. They're not going to kick a field goal. They're going to go for seven or bust. And there is that logic, and it's tempting to do so. But if you're going to buy into that logic, that absolutely pushes you to defer so that when you do, when you do get the ball second, you'll know whether you should go for it on fourth versus on that opening drive, as you're saying it, maybe he should have gone for it on fourth down because he had to get a touchdown knowing Mahomes. Well, that's right. That's a fact. And so, look, he didn't go for it on fourth down. And I just think that...
And you've already stepped into the world of crud. I said we're going to take it first. Now I have to deal with it.
Yep.
Well, then deal with it.
Right.
Go for it. This is everything.
Right.
So don't be conservative. Like, stop. I'm so confused by that. And, wow. Yeah.
I mean, of course, everybody may know, but during the regular season, there were one set of overtime rules. In the postseason, a different set of overtime rules. In the regular season, there's no mystery. You would take the ball because if you get the ball first and you go down and score a touchdown, you win the game. In the postseason now, the other team gets a chance to respond. And this was a rule that was put in place after the Chiefs-Bills game
years
ago.
In 2021.
So it was done on behalf of the Chiefs. But on behalf of football, I think it's a better rule. You've got to give the other team a chance to come back and respond. I like the rule. But it's just so clear that you defer if those are the rules.
Well, you know what? To your point, you are 100% right. And I find it fascinating in the aftermath of last night's game that the Chiefs have been practicing these specific overtime rules since training camp. The players have been practicing.
And this is an amazing statement. It shows their confidence. But in preseason, they're practicing the overtime rules
for the
postseason and the Super Bowl, which shows a vision of where they're headed. They certainly believed we better prepare for what will come at the end of the year.
I love that. And you know what? New coaches, new great coaches like D'Amico Ryans and Dan Campbell, take that. Go dream big. I mean, you know, that's how it happens.
Right.
And versus San Francisco, where we heard from Kyle Juszczyk last night and Eric Armstead that had no idea about, they did not know about these overtime rules. They saw it on the Jumbotron for the first time. And Shanahan's comments were, no, we'd gone over that with our analysts. Well, great. Are your analysts on the field? Like, they're not the ones in the arena. I'm confused by this. So I think that, this is going to be harsh, but that's a stain on San Francisco. That's a stain on the organization. This is a major thing, and it's happened before to Kyle Shanahan. Be prepared for an overtime and know what these rules are, and let your players know what the rules are. It's kind of a silly omission. I don't understand it.
Oof. One of the almost comical thoughts that I was reading today was that because, well, we know of at least two, there were probably a number of other 49ers players who were unaware of the postseason overtime rules.
And why would you say it to the media?
Well, I know. They didn't need to confess that they didn't know the rule, but they did confess it, and there are probably others who didn't. And so, therefore, if they were thinking in their head that the regular season rules were the rules, then imagine if the 49ers had gone down and actually scored a touchdown on that opening drive of the overtime. There would have been 49ers players storming the field with a victory celebration because they would have thought they had won it on that touchdown when Patrick Mahomes and his offense would have been coming up on the other side of the field to drive the ball all the way down the field. It would have been fascinating theater to see a 49ers celebration if, in fact, they'd scored a touchdown on that first drive of overtime.
I can tell what the music would be. But, you know, on the other side of the ball, Mecole Hardman, who caught the winning touchdown, had no idea he caught the winning touchdown. He didn't even know that was the end of the game. So this is all a bit confusing to me. I find it fascinating. But you know what? Hey, he's the star today. He's the one on the morning shows, not Armstead and Juszczyk. So there we go.
Well, and his plight to get to the Chiefs is an interesting one. Not the guy you expected to be the hero of the game and make the game-winning catch, but credit to him and that he found his way onto that big stage and he got the winning catch.
Well, he was with the Chiefs. And then he was released after he had a sideline scuffle in the playoffs a couple years ago, arguing about playing time with another receiver. I think it might have even been Tyreek Hill.
I think it was Tyreek Hill, yes.
And so Chiefs released him. He goes to the Jets. He wasn't used at the Jets. Eek. And then he has to come back, and look at this. I mean, like I said earlier, there are some organizations that are snake bit, i.e. San Francisco, with the weird Dre Greenlaw injury, you know, just the things that happened, that Moody, who hadn't missed a PAT all season, that kind of thing. And then there's organizations that have fairy dust, which seems to be over Kansas City. And all these guys are talented. I mean, you're not in the NFL and you're not in the Super Bowl if you're not a talented roster and a well-coached team. But there is some karma that just seems to not be going San Francisco's way.
One thing I've pondered is, so those players on the 49ers, at least some of them, didn't know the new overtime rules. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it really affected their play in the sense, if you were an offensive player and you're driving down that field in that moment, you know your job. You've got to execute. You've got to go down. You've got to put points on the board. Whether you thought a touchdown would win it for you or not, I'm not sure if it affected what took place in the game from the San Francisco side. What I do think, though, is by giving Mahomes four downs on that final drive, that definitely affected the game, because those guys, that was the decision. And that decision, well, it enabled Mahomes the luxury of four plays to get 10 yards. And you just can't allow that to Patrick Mahomes.
No, absolutely not. And everybody in the world knows it. Really head scratching.
All right, when we come back, well, we're going to take a look at Brock Purdy. What did he show us? Remember, coming into the game, there was all this noise. Is he really a Super Bowl quarterback? Is he just a product of the system?
He looks like a little kid in a Halloween costume as a football player.
He does look like a very young man. But we're going to get a chance to unpack him. He was on a very, very, very big stage, the biggest of all, and he was facing Patrick Mahomes. And I think he deserves some credit for playing with poise through most of the game. This was not an easy stage, and there were lots of question marks. If you've been listening to all of the talking heads over the course of the upcoming week.
Game manager.
He was, and you know, Cam Newton and others were quite vocal about how they felt about Brock Purdy playing in this game. Let's look at what Brock Purdy did when we come back and how he managed that offense and the balance between passing and running for the 49er offense. It'll be Brock Purdy up next when we return here on Sports Map Radio.
Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and we are talking about Brock Purdy. He was, of course, one of the big narratives coming into this game. Is Brock Purdy worthy of the stage, or was he just a game manager? Or what could be expected out of Brock Purdy playing in such a big game? Now we have seen him. In fact, we've seen him not just in the big game yesterday, but throughout the playoffs, and he was pretty good in the playoffs, but not wholly good. I mean, that first half against the Lions, he put the 49ers in a hole, and it might well have gone the wrong way for the 49ers. Brock Purdy and the 49ers were able to come back. They overcame the Lions, and they advanced. But then, you know, the Packers had him up against the ropes, and short of Jordan Love's interception, the Packers might have won that game too. So, and then Brock Purdy yesterday. When we sit back now and look at his overall postseason performance, what's your take on Brock Purdy? Let me say one other funny thing that I read. This was right after the Lions game when the 49ers had made this comeback in the second half. And I think it was Peter King's column. But
17-point comeback.
Yeah, 17-point comeback. But some of it lucky because, you know, the Ayuk catch was off a tip. And that was it could have been even a pick, but it wasn't handled well by the defender. And so there were some breaks that went the 49ers' way. And, of course, the Lions made some, I thought, bad coaching decisions with those fourth down gambles by Dan Campbell. But when I look back on it, one of the funny things that was in a column was that when the Lions were ahead of the 49ers and Purdy had not had a good first half and it was halftime, things didn't look good. And one commentator joked that the 49ers and Brock Purdy are just one half away from hearing all offseason about how Tom Brady is going to come and return and play for the 49ers. Because that second half, if Purdy had played just like he had in the first half, there's no certainty that he would be the guy that Shanahan and company would look to for next year. It just shows how fragile these things are. Now they got him. He got him all the way to the Super Bowl.
His Jets turned on in the second half versus Detroit. He won with his legs.
That's right. He had to run the ball a ton. Anyway, I thought he played a good game in the Super Bowl. I think he deserves some credit for playing with poise under the big lights. But I'm still wondering if the jury's a little bit out on what his ceiling can be. Can he really be a guy to lead a 49ers team to a Super Bowl victory? Because they had all the pieces yesterday, all that talent. And I'm not sure that next year's version of the 49ers will be as talented as this year's version. So they're going to need more out of Brock Purdy if they're going to offset whatever they lose in the offseason.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, because even if they return the whole roster, but, you know, you have to look at yesterday. You didn't have a fully healthy Deebo Samuel. I mean, if you've got a torn hamstring, that's major. You didn't have a healthy George Kittle. I mean, he left to get his shoulder checked out. Okay, that's not great.
Right.
And the guy that came in for him, Willis, got a big-time penalty that extended a Chiefs drive that was about to be extinguished. And then, obviously, we talked about earlier the Dre Greenlaw injury, which was really unfortunate.
Awful.
So, and we know with Brock Purdy, in that 0-3 little part of the season that he had in the regular season, it was without Deebo Samuel, and it was without Trent Williams.
Yep.
And when he does not have his weapons healthy around him, I think that he's pretty good. Purdy good, honestly. He's not Purdy great.
Right.
And, you know, yesterday's QBR of 70, that's good. I mean, a total QBR, perfect QBR is 158.3. He's half. So he was average.
Average.
A little bit above average.
Right.
But that isn't actually a little bit below average, honestly, if I'm doing my math right. So he was pretty good. He didn't hurt them yesterday, but he didn't. When you look at the counterpart on the other side, he was not better than Mahomes. I mean, there's nobody better than Mahomes, but he didn't play close enough. And I thought the other thing is that you look at the San Francisco roster, I think it is the best roster, arguably, in the NFL from top to bottom. Now, they were not all healthy. They had some really bad luck yesterday, but it is built to win now. And it was a huge missed opportunity because Purdy is not, at this point in his career, not experienced enough and not good enough to take them to the promised land on his own. I think he can get there, but as you noted, we don't know his ceiling yet, and to be seen. But I think he's very good. I think he's very coachable. And man, oh man, credit John Lynch and the York family. They have put a roster around him. That roster was really beat up yesterday, but that's my thought.
They've got a lot of guys under contract. And given the salary cap constraints, they're either going to have to restructure those contracts to kick the can down the road, kick the obligations down the road to try to hold the team together. They're likely to lose some key guys just because that's the nature of the NFL. Chase Young is a free agent. I don't think they'll keep him.
I don't either.
I don't think he showed enough.
He didn't move the needle, in my opinion.
And so I think even though they've got a rookie contract there with Brock Purdy, a very, very low-cost rookie contract, I think they're going to have to make some hard decisions to get under the salary cap, and that will likely mean that some of these good players, at least one or two, is likely to depart. And I don't know if they can hold all those guys together, but Chase Young will go, and then there may be there'll be somebody else who's a cap casualty just because of the nature of today's NFL.
Well, and other than teams like the Patriots, teams like the Chiefs, it is really hard to repeat, even if you bring everyone back. And we talked about this in Vegas last week of, you know, Tom Brady's Buccaneers. You know, after they won that Super Bowl in Brady's first year under Bruce Arians, they brought back all 11 starters on offense, all 11 starters on defense, and did not make it back. They didn't make it back to the Super Bowl the following year. It is very hard to do. So this back-to-back, which has been the first time in a long time, in 10 years or so for Kansas City, that's really hard to do. And, you know, a three-peat, if that happens next year, which everybody's talking about today, of course, that's really something. Of course, we haven't seen it yet. But back-to-back alone is really tricky, especially when we talked about Kansas City in the regular season leading the league in drops, and leading the league in penalties. And voila, you're looking at a Super Bowl champion. Go figure.
All right, let's shift gears for a minute. We're going to get to college football next segment, but I wanted to just go around some other NFL topics.
All right, bring it.
So the Steelers...
Is there other things in the NFL?
Well, there are. And in fact,
I love
this is the wonderful thing about the NFL is the offseason can be very entertaining.
Yes, that's very
and we've already had wonderful topics around the coaching changes, which were fascinating to see.
Really great coaching cycle. I love it.
And almost hard to believe that Bill Belichick will not be coaching next year, but all that has already unfolded on the coaching side.
But he's going to be talking to you on Sundays on your living room couch.
He will.
He's probably going to be in the booth.
Yes, he will. We'll get to hear from him. We'll see whether there is that charm that we never saw when he was talking to the media during the course of the year.
Yeah, I am anxious to see what that looks like, actually.
Yes. But some news is that, well, for one, the Steelers, who have Kenny Pickett at quarterback, and I think they need alternatives, are talking
about... Mason Rudolph as well.
Yes, Mason Rudolph. And they're talking about bringing in Ryan Tannehill. And that surprised me a little bit. What do you think the backstory is there?
Arthur Smith, who is Pittsburgh's new OC. And Arthur Smith was fired as Atlanta's head coach. But he had great success in Tennessee under John Vrabel as the OC there. And that was probably Ryan Tannehill's best run was under Arthur Smith in Tennessee. So I think if Arthur Smith had stayed in Atlanta, I think they would have gone after Tannehill there. I think they have a good relationship with each other. And I think that's what that is. And they did, Pittsburgh did release Mitchell Trubisky today after a sizzling season of 4 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. Surprise! He's released. So I don't think they're looking at Tannehill. I wouldn't think if Pittsburgh is evaluating Tannehill as QB1. But maybe as a decent backup. I don't know. Do you think they're looking at him as QB1?
Well, right now the jury is very much out on Kenny Pickett. If I had to win a game tomorrow, would I rather have Kenny Pickett or Ryan Tannehill? I think I'd probably have rather have Tannehill. Would I be excited that Tannehill is my quarterback for all of next year, is my starter?
Oh,
and
no.
If I were the Steelers betting on Tannehill? Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't like that.
But you know, Mike Tomlin loves Justin Fields. And, you know, that we don't know what's going to happen there. But I think Chicago would be taking offers. And I bet Justin Fields would love to play for a Mike Tomlin, maybe.
That's right. If,
I don't know.
If Fields gets traded, Pittsburgh does feel like a good landing spot for Justin Fields. And it does appear that way. There was a report that came out that the Bears would be open to trading the Caleb Williams pick, but they would need an historic haul of draft pick in return. And I don't know if they're going to get that. And I think that's the right thing for them to say at this moment, but they may be dead set on keeping Caleb Williams and trading Justin Fields, and Steelers would be a great destination for Justin Fields.
I mean, if anything, it would keep the Commanders from getting him, I believe that's why they hired Cliff Kingsbury, planning on getting Caleb at number two.
Well, I don't see how Caleb falls to them at number two.
I don't either.
No, the Commanders are going to have to trade up. They'll have to be the one.
Yes.
Look, they're better poised to trade up than anybody else because it's only one spot. But it's fascinating. I mean, if you were the Bears and you're willing to trade down, you could trade down to number two, and if you're going to keep Justin Fields, and then you could trade again out of the Drake May pick, number two, and just get pick after pick after pick. It would be fascinating to see that. All right, when we come back, we're going to look at some college football stories that may have flown under the radar. And a lot of it has to do with Ohio State, so it'll be fun to unpack
that. Watch out, Columbus.
When we return here on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and we've been talking NFL and Super Bowl for nearly all the show. We've unpacked a bunch of different storylines there, but I did want to cycle back to you about some findings in college football, which were particularly interesting, particularly around Ohio State, which stunned me to see what you're about to share. I really was impressed by what they have done.
So Ohio State's been in the news because Bill O'Brien was hired as their offensive coordinator. Then he just left, took the head coaching job at Boston College. I will refrain commenting on that. But then, so now they're bringing in Chip Kelly, UCLA. So I started just looking into, just poking around with Ohio State. And you've got to see what I've come up with. And last week we were in Vegas, and I got to be at the NFL Honor Awards, which was so awesome, and watched the Houston Texans with C.J. Stroud get the Offensive Rookie of the Year, Will Anderson the Defensive Rookie of the Year. So I started to look who previous Rookies of the Year were. This is unbelievable. This is so one-sided for the Buckeye program. They have a corner on this market. Since 2016, from 2016 to 2023, Ohio State has had the Defensive Rookie of the Year or the Offensive Rookie of the Year in 2016, 17, 19, 20, 22, and 23.
They've had one or the other all those different years, sort of
yeah.
six out of the last 7 years.
Yes, and you want to hear these names?
Yes.
2016, Joey Bosa, Defensive Rookie of the Year.
He was good.
I mean, now he's with the Chargers. 2017, Marshawn Lattimore, Defensive Rookie of the Year. Incredible. 2019, brother Nick Bosa, Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2020, Chase Young, Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2020, both of them with San Francisco now, funny. 2022, Garrett Wilson, Offensive Rookie of the Year. And 2023, our guy here in Houston, C.J. Stroud, Offensive Rookie of the Year. What the heck? What is this program doing? And they haven't had a national championship in any of that time, actually, which is fascinating.
Right, but it only takes really one good guy
yes.
to end up being the Rookie of the Year somewhere. And I guess the Buckeyes have had at least that one good guy who's been an outstanding rookie. That's really quite a run.
And they've all performed, or so far, have all performed at an incredibly high level in the NFL. There's no bust here.
Yeah, it wasn't just a good rookie year. Most of them, I guess Chase Young might be the one that hasn't really lived up to expectations.
I think that's accurate.
Defensive Rookie of the Year, to be sure, that year. But since that time, well, he was traded away by the Commanders to the 49ers midseason.
He's taken, what, number four overall?
I would have said three or four. That's right.
Maybe he's three.
And so he clearly came with big expectations. And then the Commanders, well, they had that amazing blue chip defensive line. Jonathan Allen was in there, Chase Young, Montez Sweat. And then they traded a couple of them away in this offseason, including Chase Young, to the 49ers. So he's the one who hasn't really lived up to that rookie hype. But all the others are looking pretty strong.
I mean, stout. And, you know, what's really interesting, because we've got both Garrett Wilson on here and C.J. Stroud. So last season, only four times in the NFL have teammates won Offensive Rookie of the Year and Defensive Rookie of the Year in the same year. Only four times. Last year and this year were back-to-backs with New York Jets, Sauce Gardner, and Garrett Wilson. And this year with the Texans, C.J. Stroud, and Will Anderson. Out of the four times in the history of the NFL, these two are back-to-back last year and this year.
Crazy.
That is some kind of crazy. I love this kind of stuff.
Because it's not like Ohio State, as a collegiate program, has been exceptional. They're very good, but they haven't won the national. They're not Alabama.
And they've lost to Michigan three out of the last four times.
Yeah, that's been really their Achilles heel.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, and there's the funny thing is, there is talk about this Ryan Day's job security, which is funny. When you look at what he produces. But, you know, when you can't beat your rival, Jim Harbaugh got that same talk when he couldn't win the big game against Ohio State. And then he got it. And he got it over and over and over again until he got a national championship and now is off to the NFL. But it just shows you how precarious these coaching jobs are. Wow.
Well, speaking of coaching jobs, the Dallas Cowboys have found themselves a new defensive coordinator picking up Mike Zimmer. And
break that down for me. Do you like it?
Well, I thought it was a good pick. Look, it's interesting because they were talking to several former head coaches who had been let go and who are now poised to become defensive coordinators. Look, that was the position of Dan Quinn or his background when he joined, and Quinn made a good mark on the Cowboys defense. I don't think anybody would look back and say, well, he didn't do his job. The Cowboys defense is better for having had Quinn.
Oh, outstanding.
Recency bias makes us recall the collapse, and it was a collapse against the Packers. The Cowboys defense was miserable.
Yeah.
But Dan Quinn had a great run as defensive coordinator there. The Cowboys were entertaining the idea of hiring Ron Rivera. By most accounts, they interviewed Rex Ryan, the ESPN broadcaster, and they settled on Mike Zimmer. And I don't want to say settled on. I think they were very excited to get Mike Zimmer. Zimmer, of course, is a guy who has had head coaching experience with the Vikings. Nearly every year that he was head coach of the Vikings, he had a very stout defense. And, of course, He was the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys for many years and performed at a very high level. One year he did it under Bill Parcells, so whatever wisdom Parcells has to impart, Zimmer got a chance to work for Parcells. In fact, Zimmer made the transition when Parcells came. Zimmer made the transition from the 4-3 defense that Zimmer had always run to a 3-4 defense that Parcells wanted him to run. So Zimmer showed the flexibility to change based on the head coach's direction. So I think he's got great set of experiences in different kinds of defenses. I think the Cowboys would stick to the 4-3. That's how they're built. They've got a solid defensive line core, and frankly, their weak spot is linebacker, so they've got to shore that up. But I think they'll stick with a 4-3, which is Zimmer's sweet spot, and I think they're poised to have a really good defense next year. Honestly, I think the great thing about Mike Zimmer...
They've got the personnel.
Yes, and
Zimmer... No doubt about it.
Zimmer is somebody who believes in more size and more heft in the middle of the defense, as where the Achilles heel for the Cowboys has been stopping the run, and they've been weak up the middle or weak at the linebacker spot. You know, they had to sub in while Marquis Bell was playing. He was a safety who came up, a converted safety to play linebacker after Leighton Van Der Esch's injury. So I do think Zimmer will shore up that run defense, and that will not be a weak spot. Whether he has to sacrifice some other spot on the defense in order to stop the run, we'll see. But I think Zimmer was a very good hire for the Dallas Cowboys.
Is Van Der Esch coming back next season?
So the problem with Van Der Esch
is... It's a neck situation, isn't it?
This is his second time he's been through this. It's a neck issue, and most people are thinking, for his own good, he probably should retire. He has not announced his retirement, and some suggest that he is clinging to the hope that he can come back, as he did once before from a neck injury. But I don't think the Cowboys can count on that. And honestly, I'm not sure it's best for Leighton Van Der Esch to try to play football anymore. He's got his long-term health to consider.
Yeah, no
so
kidding.
The Cowboys really did. They got Damon Clark. He's a linebacker, a true linebacker. But Micah Parsons is really no longer a linebacker. He's moved up, obviously, to defensive end on most plays. So with Van Der Esch going, Damon Clark returning, the Cowboys do need to pick up some linebacker help in this offseason. They did take a linebacker whom they were very high on out of the University of Texas. Last year they drafted in the third round over Sean, and he looked great in camp, but then he tore his ACL. And so they love to see him return. It was obviously an early.
Well, and look how high the defense performed without him.
Yes.
So it should be even better.
Yep.
So we were at Media Row last week in Vegas.
Yes.
Emmitt Smith was there.
Yes.
And he was very vocal.
Yes.
About the collapse that he saw his Cowboys do at the hands of number 7 Green Bay in the playoffs. What do you make of Emmitt's comments?
Well, I think he's voicing what everybody's feeling. He said he was embarrassed by the loss. He couldn't believe the loss. He thought the Cowboys were going to do better. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, that is exactly the posture of every Cowboys fan. And frankly...
And former player.
And former player. And frankly, the coaches too. I mean, you know, we've never heard from Dan Quinn post that loss. But,
I know.
But this is the nature of the beast. I mean, he's just gone and we're now all talking Commanders. But Dan Quinn, Mike McCarthy, those guys should feel very embarrassed. They should feel exactly what Emmitt Smith vocalized.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I was surprised, I guess, because I think of Emmitt as being... But, you know, I appreciated it because it was refreshing. It was like, you know what? You are a Cowboy for life, and this hurt.
Well, it was an honest representation of how he and all the Cowboy fans felt. I mean, it's interesting. There was this, oh, my gosh, can you hear what Emmitt said? Well, that's how we all felt.
Yeah, that's accurate.
It's just the way it is. I mean, it was a very embarrassing, disheartening loss. Well, you're scratching your head, how can they show up that badly in a game that really matters? I mean, the other curious comment that came out of Radio Row Week was DeMarcus Lawrence saying that he was fatigued, or some of the members, he thought his defense felt fatigued down the stretch. Well, all the teams have played the same number of games. I think that was a curious answer as well. Mm-hmm. But it'll be a new season next year.
And that's right. We start over. We're 0-0 now.
Well, I'm sure
of last night.
I'm sure that Emmitt will... Hope the Cowboys can do better next year. He did give a big thumbs up for Mike Zimmer's hire.
Okay, great. There you go.
All right, I'm hoping it's Anthony Pepe up next year, the diehards. He will be following us here. You're listening to Sports Map Radio.